everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
And I'm Jaden.
And I'll say this about comic news. Probably for about a month after San Diego Comic-Con, it seems like the amount of news or the importance of the news that does come out definitely seems to be lessened. I guess it's to be expected. You know, there's a lot of big announcements at San Diego. Some things that probably could be announced earlier are kind of saved for San Diego due to their importance. I would say even to the point where the comic news cycle is kind of built around San Diego, like companies know, you know, when they're planning their announcements and making their plans, planning the future of their universes or their publishing line. San Diego's like this big known entity that everything is kind of planned around. So how do you feel about that, Jaden? You agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree. There's not much going on around this time.
I mean, there's a few announcements here or there. There's definitely some clarification or more information coming out about some of the things that were announced in San Diego. You know, like maybe there's a series that was announced at San Diego and, you know, a few weeks go by and now we learn more about the series. You know, maybe a creative team is announced or things like that, so.
Yeah.
We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
So let's go ahead and talk about what little comic news we have. This episode's mainly going to be focused on more movie and TV news, so I'll be turning it over to Jaden for the majority of the episode, but there are a few things I want to mention. The writer for the Superman title, Gene Yang, critically acclaimed graphic novel American Born Chinese, came out, I believe, 2 years ago now. He did a interview with Newsarama recently, where he talked about the Truth storyline that's playing out through the Superman books right now. And for those of you who don't know, basically Superman, his secret identity has been revealed to the world. So in three of the books, Action Comics, Superman Batman, and Superman Wonder Woman, that has already happened. And we're seeing the fallout and the consequences of the world realizing that Clark Kent, Superman, has been hiding among them all this time. But in the fourth Superman book, the one titled just Superman, which Gene Yang is writing, that has yet to happen. We're seeing events unfold that lead up to Lois Lane revealing Superman's identity. So the Truth storyline is going to run 4 issues in each of the 4 Superman titles. And then after that, all the titles are going to sync up, and they're all going to be telling a story in the same time frame, rather than Superman being ahead or behind, I guess you'd say, telling a story that has already happened in the other 3 titles. So it's a very interesting article. He talks about the villain that Superman is facing in that storyline, called Hoarder or something like that, described as a cross between like a kind of a technological group and a gang headed by an evil version of Mark Zuckerberg. One thing a lot of people may not know is Gene Yang was actually a computer programmer before he became a comic writer. He went to school for computer programming, so he's very aware and knowledgeable about that whole technology field. He worked in Silicon Valley when he first got out of college in the computer field, and he still lives there. So, he did also mention at the end of the article about how Clark's life's about to get worse. So, not sure what else they can do to him. You know, he's been severely diminished as far as his powers go, and his secret identity has been revealed to the world. So it's an interesting story, definitely a way to challenge Superman that we haven't seen before. I've said many times that Superman's one of the hardest characters to write just because it's hard to present a challenge to him. You know, he's so powerful. How do you present a challenge that, you know, makes for an interesting story? So I really like what their DC's doing right now with their Superman titles. So we'll see where it goes from here. Have you read any of those, Jaden?
I'm not caught up to Gene Yang's Superman yet, but it definitely sounds interesting. I like the idea that Superman's going to be very vulnerable, not only with his secret identity out there, but also with his powers being diminished at the same time. It's very cool.
Yeah, what's cool is you get to see him, you know, still be Superman and realize that it's not because of the powers. The powers don't make the man.
You know, yeah.
He's Superman because of who he is, not because of the powers he has. So, next bit of news, DC's Bombshells, which was basically started out as some variant covers. You know, DC does their variant cover theme every month. And so these were basically kind of based on the old World War II bombshell trope, if you will, that a lot of pilots and bomber crews used to paint on their airplanes. And so I don't even know where the actual origin of the idea came from, but it was a way just to do something different. So DC took a lot of their female characters and kind of gave them this retro World War II type look. So Zatanna, Harley Quinn, Wonder Woman, Batwoman. And the covers were wildly popular. So they took a lot of those designs and they actually made statues out of them. The Hawk Girl statue in particular was a very popular choice for a lot of people. And once again, statues sold very well, very popular. So what DC decided to do was actually make a book. And so they got writer Marguerite Bennett to kind of create a backstory for a lot of these different versions of these heroes, these superheroines. And what she did was basically create a world where all the superheroines came first. And it's a digital first series. The first issue, if you will, came out the 25th, so a few days ago. And then I believe the first print issue will come out on the 12th of August. So there'll be one digital issue a week, and then once a month they'll collect those four, and you'll see it in print. Now, one thing I've heard is that sometimes in print the stories don't kind of hold up as well, just because you know, they're shorter stories, usually about 10 pages. So when you read them in the collected edition regular size issue, it can seem a bit choppy. So
yeah.
I don't know, I guess we'll see. But it's pretty interesting. Apparently the first issue is Batwoman, who swoops down and saves a young boy and his parents who are leaving a theater in Gotham from a thug trying to rob them. So, yeah, I mean, basically Batwoman prevents Batman from ever becoming Batman. She saves the Waynes. So, pretty interesting. And the bat in Batwoman actually has two meanings. Apparently she was one of the League of Your Own type female baseball players. And so the bat and her name is kind of twofold, you know, both the symbol of the bat, strike fear, and also, you know, bat, because, you know, she batted as a player. So pretty interesting. The art I've seen is by an artist named Marguerite Savage. And it's pretty interesting. It's not my favorite art. It's definitely retro-looking. A lot of the designs are really, really cool. So it's certainly an interesting take, kind of a different world of the DC multiverse where all the women came first, all the women heroes. So there are a few men. We've seen a few men. There were a few covers that had male versions of the heroes, so... If you're interested at all in that, I would definitely suggest checking out the digital issues rather than waiting for the reprint, actual print issues, for exactly the reason I said it can seem choppy when you read them in the collected. So, next bit of news is kind of a catch-all. There are a lot of titles coming out in October. So the solicits for a lot of those books just came out recently, and we know there's no big DC event this September. They do have a few things happening in October, and they're not the only ones. You know, obviously the all-new, all-different Marvel, a lot of their titles are going to be released in October. I recently saw that once again, it seems like a weekly occurrence now, Marvel pushed back a few of their Secret Wars titles. So yeah, we now have Secret Wars titles that are scheduled to be released after the debut of the all-new, all-different Marvel universe. So if things continue to slide like this, Marvel's just going to have a huge mess on their hands. And honestly, I don't know how they're going to be able to fix it. The bottom line is... the bottom line is they just need to get their act together. You know, like, how are you going to start this new universe and people are going to see what the status quo of the new universe is when Secret Wars is not even over? You're going to completely spoil the ending of Secret Wars.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand how they got this behind.
Yeah, I mean, they had, like, a six-week cushion, and it's already gone. And it's still, two full months away. Yeah, quite a mess. Anyway, over on the DC side of things, Batman Eternal is going to be returning in October with the first four issues scheduled to be released in October. And it's actually going to be called Batman and Robin Eternal. Same two, I guess you'd say, story architects, if you will, as the Batman Eternal series from last year. So that's James Tynion and Scott Snyder. They're basically the ones plotting it out, overseeing it. Writers are listed as Steve Orlando, who's writing the new Midnighter series for DC, and James Tynion. Art is going to be handled by Scott Eaton, Tony Daniel, Paul Pelletier, and Scott Eaton. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. Those are all really good artists. Not sure why Scott Eaton's listed twice. But Paul Pelletier, maybe he's doing pencil and inks, perhaps. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of Paul Pelletier and Tony Daniel, so we don't know too much about it. We do know that it's going to have far-reaching effects into all the Batman books. That's no surprise, much like Batman Eternal did. And we know that it's a case from Batman and Dick Grayson's past. It has to do with human trafficking, a villain named Mother. So that's all we know at this point. Also, on the DC side of things, Justice League 45 starts the Gods and Men crossover. So at the conclusion of the Darkseid War, the war between Darkseid and Anti-Monitor, we know that from announcements DC made at San Diego that a lot of the Justice League are going to have power of gods, the new gods to be precise. We saw that in last week's Justice League where Batman became a new god by sitting on Metron, the Mobius chair. So we also know that Flash will be getting the powers of the Black Racer. And I can't remember who Geoff Johns said what power Green Lantern was going to get. But anyway, so all these Justice Leaguers are going to be gaining, vast powers. And spinning out of that, we're going to see a lot of one-shots by creators such as Peter Tomasi, Rob Williams, Doc Shaner, Francis Manapul, Tom King, Scott Collins. And it's... those one-shots are going to be basically telling the story of how these Justice Leaguers deal with these powers that have elevated them to godlike status but aren't necessarily powers that are wanted. I mean, if you look at Flash, for instance, the Black Racer is kind of like the agent of death, I guess you'd say. He used to appear to people right before they die. And much like the Flash, one of his superpowers was super speed. He wore these cosmic skis and he could fly super fast and travel vast distances in an instant. So here we're going to see Flash with this power, but at the same time, he's linked to death in a way. And so, he's going to be struggling with that. So, you know, whenever Geoff Johns decides to do something, I mean, he's only on Justice League now. You know, we know he's chief creative officer for DC, and that obviously he has other duties, and he's working a lot on the TV side of things, but he's taking a break from those duties to, you know, really get his hands into the meat of this gods and men story. So I expect it to have some pretty far-reaching ramifications in the DC universe going forward. And also from DC in September, we see Superman Lois and Clark number one, written by Dan Jurgens and art by Lee Weeks. So this is the return of the pre-52 Superman, where he was married to Lois. You know, this is the classic version of Superman that Dan Jurgens worked on for years and years. A lot of people are familiar with this version of Superman because the Death of Superman issue in 1992 or 93 that got so much attention worldwide, you know, showing up on the regular 6 o'clock news. So it'll be interesting to see what Jurgens does with these beloved versions of the classic DC characters. Also in October, Black Magic number one, written by Greg Rucka with art by Nicola Scott. If you haven't listened to my interview with Nicola Scott from San Diego Comic-Con, I urge you to do that. CBR, Comic Book Resources, recently ran a poll. They listed like 25 or 30 series that were announced at Image Expo about a month ago now that are coming out, and asked their visitors to their site to vote on which Image Expo title they were most excited about. And this was the title that came out number one by a pretty large margin. It's called Black Magic. It basically tells the story of a detective, a police detective, who also can trace her lineage back to before the Library of Alexandria burned as part of a family of witches, if you will. So in the interview with Nicola, she talks about one of the main themes they want to explore is this dichotomy or duality of this central character, how she's so wrapped up in the modern world with modern methods of solving crimes and such, while she has this very ancient power. So Nicola's art that I've seen so far for the series looks absolutely amazing. And, you know, Greg Rucka, his work kind of speaks for itself as far as the quality of the stories he tells and the great characterization he provides. So I'm right there with all those CBR voters that are very excited about this series. So we'll see where it goes from there. And another title that's coming in October, as I mentioned, the all-new, all-different Marvel. They've come right out and said that their flagship title going forward is going to be Iron Man. And I'm sure for that reason they put their number one writer on it, Brian Michael Bendis. He's going to be joined by his collaborator from his lengthy Ultimate Spider-Man run, David Marquez on art. So October sees issue 1 and 2 of Invincible Iron Man. So issue 1, I believe, is scheduled to come out October 7th. Again, that's the same day as the last issue of Secret Wars, but we've already seen other crossover Secret Wars issues pushed back beyond that date. I don't know if it's going to affect the story at all that Brian Bendis is going to tell, or if they're just going to say, whatever, screw it, just let him do what he wants to do, and if it spoils some Secret Wars stuff, it spoils some Secret Wars stuff. I don't know. I mean, I was definitely a fan of Brian Michael Bendis, Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man, that David Marquez was handling the art on, so I'll definitely pick up the first probably 2 or 3 issues of this to check it out, see where it goes. Iron Man used to be one of my favorite Marvel characters back in the day. I feel like with all the exposure he's gotten from the movies and being in 1,000 different Avengers comics, that he's kind of gotten watered down. I'm hoping that in the all-new, all-different Marvel universe going forward, Brian Michael Bendis kind of bring him back to basics. So I guess only time's going to tell on that, basically. Also coming in October from DC's Vertigo imprint, Clean Room, from Gail Simone. Big Gail Simone fan. And this is much different from anything she's done before, much darker. She's calling it her darkest journey yet. And it's basically telling the story of an evil self-help guru. And basically there's a mysterious suicide. This man who was going to the self-help guru kills herself, and his fiance is like a reporter or something like that. And so she decides to start investigating and kind of goes down the rabbit hole, so to speak. Also coming in October from Marvel, we got Extraordinary X-Men number 1 from Jeff Lemire and Humberto Ramos. There's a couple of these X-Men titles. They looked very different from any of the X-Men titles that have come before. I'm interested in them only in so much as seeing what the new status quo of the X-Men is going to be. You know, we've heard a lot of rumors about X-Men maybe not being on Earth anymore, with Fox having the rights to the X-Men. It seems like Marvel doesn't want to do much to promote them or the Fantastic Four. I mean, it's gotten really bad to the point where this year, all the promotional pieces you see, you know, this vast array of this cast of Marvel characters, and, you know, not seeing Human Torch or Thing or Mrs. Fantastic or Wolverine or Cyclops, it feels wrong to me. You know, I understand Marvel wants to get the rights to these characters back, but it just, I don't know. I don't agree with the policy. I completely understand. You know, Marvel's kicking themselves for licensing these characters away, but it just, I mean, when you put out a poster, it's supposed to be inclusive of the Marvel Universe. I don't know how you leave off the Fantastic Four and the X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to bite the bullet and, you know, show all your characters. I mean, you look back on it, you know, 10 or 20 years from now, when they have the rights to all those characters back, it's going to look weird to look back at this era and see these, you know, main Marvel characters. I mean, Fantastic Four started the Marvel age. And they're not appearing in any of the promo stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Completely. Even to the point where when they redo old promo stuff, they're taking them out and replacing them. It's one thing not to create any new promo images without those. That's bad enough. But when you're taking, like, for example, the cover to Secret Wars number 1, the original Secret Wars series, Marvel Heroes, you know, Secret Wars from 85 or 84 or whatever, and you're putting that on a t-shirt, but you're taking out all the old Fantastic Four and X-Men images and replacing them with other characters, just doesn't sit very well with me. One last all-new, all-different Marvel title I'll mention is Amazing Spider-Man by Dan Slott, with art by Giuseppe Camuncola. Again, like the X-Men titles I mentioned, and like Iron Man, double shipping, which, again, don't get me started on Marvel. I mean, you know, here they are launching like 60 to 70 new titles with their all-new, all-different. That's bad enough, and then you're going to double ship some of them?
Yeah.
Man, just seems greedy to me. On top of which, you have all, I mean, they're putting out like 50 Secret War tie-ins right now, and that stuff's all getting pushed back. What are you going to have, like 120 books on the shelves coming in October? Plus another, you know, 30? Because you have titles double shipping? That's 150 books, man. That's like ridiculous.
Yeah, definitely.
Just ridiculous. I mean, 40 books a month. 40 books a week. I don't know. Anyway, I am interested in seeing this new status quo of Peter Parker and Amazing Spider-Man. He's taking Parker Industries, I think it's called, Global. So it'll be kind of cool to see Peter Parker as like the cool guy, the James Bond traveling the world as a CEO type, with Spider-Man as his bodyguard. I mean, we've heard this tale before, right? Tony Stark, CEO, bodyguard, Iron Man. Now we're going to see the Spider-Man version of it, so it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah, definitely.
Next thing I want to mention is that Think Tank from Top Cow, one of my favorite series of all time, is also returning. It's going to be returning in September, actually. And for those of you not familiar with Think Tank, I want to encourage you, go to the link in the show notes. You can go to Comic Book Resources and you can read Think Tank 1 through 4 are available for free. Free comics. They're available through an article on that site, Comic Book Resources. Again, it gets my highest possible recommendation. The slogan or motto of the comics, reading this comic will make you smarter. It's definitely true. All the technology that seems so far-fetched and like science fiction that's used in the comic. If you flip to the back, Matt Hawkins has what he calls science class, where he has links to articles on the internet that explain the technology that's used and how it's right there on the cutting edge, but actually available today. So a very good series. It's coming out, returning, as I said, in September. It's going to be in full color now. So I encourage everybody to let your comic shop know, pre-order it, let them know that you want it. Think Tank actually kind of went away after issue 12. The sales just weren't there for the book, but yet it sold very, 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 very well in trade, and so they decided to bring it back, much to the delight of Matt Hawkins. But books like this survive on sales of the floppies, not on the trades. So if you want to see it continue, you need to be ordering those monthly books.
Yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah, it's really, really, really good. Another thing I'll mention from DC is Cyborg came out last week. Very well received, written by David Walker, art by Yvonne Rees. I've read my fair share of Teen Titans over the years with Vic Stone, and I would say he's somewhat of a different character in the New 52. You know, beyond the obvious of him being a member of the Justice League rather than the Teen Titans, but Teen Titans or Justice League, you know, whichever. At the end of the day, it's a team book. He's never really had his own solo series. I think he had like a 4 or 5 issue miniseries at one point. But now he's headlining his own series, and I feel like for the first time, I'm really seeing who Victor Stone is, the toll it's taken on him being part man, part machine. Definitely a product of his time when he was part of the critically acclaimed Marv Wolfman and George Perez run of Teen Titans back in the 80s. Sometimes he'd fall into that old trope of, you know, angry black guy. And we don't really have that trope around these days. I think as a society, we've kind of grown past it. So, as I said, I feel like we're meeting him for the first time. He felt more human, more of a real character, a realistic character, if you will, than he ever has before. But at the same time, the technology that he possesses in his robotic half is more advanced than it's ever been in any previous Cyborg story. So it's a very interesting dichotomy when you think about it. The characterization David Walker's provided has made him more relatable and more human than ever, while at the same time, the technology that makes him Cyborg has perhaps advanced to a point where he's less human than he's ever been. So, very intriguing story. It's going to be interesting to see where David Walker goes from here. And everybody I know that read the book really liked it. It got a lot of attention on Twitter and social media, people talking about what a great story it was. So, like I said, it just came out last week. Probably can get out to your local comic shop and still find a copy of issue 1. You definitely want to pick it up and give it a try. Not to mention there's going to be a Cyborg movie coming out. You remember the release date for that, Jaden? Is it 2020?
Yeah, probably something like that. I think that's when the Flash movie's coming out. So,
yeah, so definitely recommend checking it out. And also, another black character, one of the first, maybe the first black character to have his own title, Black Lightning, who throughout the years hasn't really shown up too much in the DCU. We found out recently that perhaps the reason for that is that the creator of that character, Tony Isabella, apparently had not created that character for DC as work for hire, but rather in a partnership with DC. And it wasn't until he attempted to buy out DC's half of the partnership the DC kind of gave him the short end of the stick and started accrediting artist Trevor Von Eden as co-creator, and this basically led to a split between Tony Isabella and DC for many years. There was a lot of bad blood on the part of Tony. I felt like he wasn't treated fairly. But with a lot of the changes in personnel over the years, Jeff Johns, Dan Didio, and such, they've kind of extended an olive branch to Tony and said to him, you know, how can we make this right? We know there's a collected edition of the Black Lightning series that's set to be released, and this may signal a return to prominence for Black Lightning, which would be really good. And we know that Jeff Johns kind of has a knack and an affinity for taking some of these older characters, these second tier characters that haven't been around for a while or have been underutilized, and really getting to the heart of the character, the core of the character, and adding some new rich characterization and backstory, and really kind of raising the level of awareness of comic readers for some of these characters. So I think that Black Lightning is a perfect candidate for all those things. I would love to see Tony Isabella have some input into where the character goes from here. As I said, he probably one of the least used characters that has the most potential in my mind that of any DC character I can think of. Well, him and probably the Legion of Superheroes currently are criminally underused. So I will definitely see where it goes from there.
I know who I am! I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude!
Movie news! Quite a bit of movie news to get through, Jaden. Fire away.
Alright, so Stan Lee responded to the Human Torch being cast as, what's his name?
Michael B. Jordan?
Yes, Michael B. Jordan. He responded by saying that it was an interesting take and he's very excited to see it. And he also said that people weren't mad because that he was black, but they were mad because it was a change, just like that in Spider-Man. They weren't mad that it was another white actor, but they were still mad that they were changing actors.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know if this is necessarily news at this point. I mean, all the controversy over a black guy being cast as Johnny Storm, all that hubbub was like months and months and months ago.
Yeah, well, I guess Stan Lee's now talking about it, so.
He just came out and said it, or, like, what was the context or whatever? Oh, Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah. Interview with Entertainment Weekly, yeah. So, I mean, how do you feel about it?
I don't really care. I think that the movie's going to be bad because they changed too much stuff, but I don't think this is the change that is going to be ruining anything. I think it would be just fine if it had the right direction, but it doesn't seem like it really is holding very true to the source material at all.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I wouldn't say I'm mad. It does bother me when they change things just for the sake of changing them.
Yeah.
To me, Johnny Storm's a white guy with blonde hair, you know. Along the same line, so was John Constantine. But I thought Keanu Reeves did an okay job in the film. He didn't have blonde hair, but I thought the film was still okay. I don't know. I just think maybe, you know, I would have less of a problem had they made like Sue Storm black rather than Johnny Storm. I don't know why, but I just think like some characters, it doesn't necessarily bother me. And some characters it does. And I feel like for some reason Johnny Storm is like, should be white. I don't know. That's just me. I'm trying to think of what other characters they could change and that I wouldn't really care. Any jump out to you?
No, not really. I just think that they probably were happy. They really wanted him in the movie. And they were like, well, I guess we could just give you this role because We could make that work.
Yeah. Like, it even bothers me that Aquaman's hair is not blonde with Jason Momoa doing it, playing that role in the DC universe coming up. So, I don't know. I get, you know, a lot of other creators have gone on record as saying this also. Like, rather than, like, race swap or, you know, change heroes, like, you heard a lot of people talking about this when Sam Wilson, who formerly was Falcon, became Captain America. Like, yeah. Why are you taking a black hero and having him replace a white hero? If you want more black heroes, just, like, create more black heroes. You know? Don't have them, like, follow in the footsteps of these white guys. Like, just, you know, make new, good, interesting black characters. So, I don't know. That's my two cents. Anyway, what else you got?
Oh, well, Fox also released a featurette for Fantastic Four that was that talks about alternate realities.
What does that have to do with the movie?
Well, I mean, in the movie, they have a lot of, like, interdimensional travel and stuff and, like, a bunch of alternate realities, and they're just trying to loop in the some of the stuff in the movie might actually be possible or whatever. I don't know, just trying to build the hype train, it seems like.
Did I hear somewhere that instead of... Okay, so, like, if we looked at the original Fantastic Four movie, it was kind of close to the comic where they went up into space in a rocket, right? And the cosmic radiation came through and, like, gave them their powers. And in the new movie, apparently, they're, like, instead of them going up into space and being changed by gamma rays or cosmic rays or whatever, they go into another dimension and get their powers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, like you said, some of those changes that you're talking about, don't know how I feel about that. Anyway, looking at the article, this Dr. Michio Kaku, whatever, like, I've seen this guy before, like, on YouTube and such. He gives some pretty good interviews, like, pretty good. He really, like, takes these crazy science ideas and makes them, like, understandable and relatable, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so pretty cool if you're interested in learning about alternate realities. He kind of explains how they actually could exist in the world we live in today, so. Pretty cool. Alright, what's next?
Batman Superman cover of Empire is out, and Zack Snyder says that he really likes Batman's costume because there's, like, a real gravitas to it.
The costume or Ben Affleck's portrayal of Batman?
Well, I mean, I think it's just kind of, like, in between. I mean, it's just the way that he looks. He just has a gravitas to him.
Huh. Did you see that? Well, obviously you saw the cover. What did you think?
I don't know. I think they both look really cool. I never really had any problems with the way that either of them looked.
I heard some people saying that he really looked a lot like the Batman from the classic Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, I think it definitely does.
Like, he looks... I mean, looking at the cover right now, he looks like 1.5 times the size of Superman.
Yeah, he is pretty huge.
Yeah, so I don't know if he's, like, zoomed in closer or what. I don't know how I feel about it. He looks kind of puffed up, like maybe he's allergic to shrimp but ate some anyway. And he got all swollen. So I don't know. I mean, I'll reserve judgment. I'll wait to see how he looks on the big screen. But yeah, he does look a little puffed up. I will say it doesn't bother me as much looking at it right now as it did when I first saw it. When I first saw it, I was like, man, he doesn't even have a neck. Like, what is he? On the venom that... drug that Bane took to get him all yoked. I don't know. I will say this. I don't think that Man of Steel or Batman vs. Superman, rather, is going to be bad because of the way Batman looks.
Yeah, I think that everything in Man of Steel looked great, I thought. I mean, besides it being really dull.
Yeah, I mean, if there are things wrong with this movie, it's not going to be, you know, like the way Batman looks is going to be the least of the problems. Between Zack Snyder and David Goyer still having their hand on it, I just... Another thing, I've heard a lot of people that are that weren't very excited or didn't have high expectations, and then they say, oh, then I saw the trailer and now I'm excited for it. I don't understand.
Yeah.
The trailer did, if anything, if anything, it just confirmed the fears that we had about those two guys just not getting who Superman is supposed to be. So, I don't know. I guess only time will tell.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got?
Also, we have a lot of people are saying that the movie depiction of the Wasp in Ant-Man failed to live up. And there's people saying that it really didn't do the character enough justice in the movie, and that Evangeline Lilly's portrayal was not very good.
Well, I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, neither have I.
But from what I understand, so the Wasp is, in the beginning of the movie, Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp we know from, Marvel Comics, from, founding member of the Avengers, whatever, she, dies, the first 4 minutes. And then supposedly she has a daughter or something who's never actually appeared in the comics, and then that's, supposedly the Wasp character, so to speak, but she, though she's, super knowledgeable and should be the one that, becomes Ant Woman, I guess you'd say. She doesn't because of all the typical, cliches of women, so to speak. So, I don't know. Like I said, I haven't seen it myself, so it's hard to really critique it, but I will say that Marvel seems to be even further behind DC. DC seems to be making strides towards more gender diversity in their comics. We've heard these complaints for a long time now. You go to buy a Justice League shirt and there's no Wonder Woman on it, or, things like that. You look back at Marvel's, track record, it's pretty horrible. They come out with these lines of Avengers toys for the movies. There's no Black Widow. They come out with these lines of toys for Guardians of the Galaxy. There's no Gamora.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You did see Avengers 2, right?
Yeah, I did.
So, I haven't seen it yet, but I know that one of, the most iconic scenes in the movie is, Captain America loses his shield or something, right?
Yeah.
And then, a Avengers Quinjet comes down real close to the ground. And then what happens?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, he loses his shield a few times.
So he loses his shield, and then the next scene, this Quinjet comes real close to the ground. And, the door opens up.
I don't really remember.
And then somebody comes out on a motorcycle. How do you not remember this?
I don't know. I only saw it one time.
Black Widow. Black Widow comes out on a motorcycle. And she picks up his shield, right? She's like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's I was in the, trailers. That's the only reason I've seen it. A thousand times. She, picks up his shield. It's one of the most iconic scenes in the whole movie, right?
Yeah.
So they made this toy with a jet, Quinjet, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it had this door that opened on the bottom of the thing, and this motorcycle launched out. Just recreating the scene from the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guess who's on the motorcycle?
Yeah, Captain America.
Captain America. I mean, it's her scene in the movie! And the toy comes in, But I understand why they do it, Little girls rather go to the Barbie section or whatever. They're not buying superhero toys anyway, but I don't know. It just bugs me. I mean, how can they? How can you get girls interested when they see Black Widow or they see Gamora on the big screen? Then you go to try to find a t-shirt in, this girls section at Target, and it's all pink stuff with, Disney princesses.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Quite. So, I guess that's a long-winded way to say I'm not surprised that they failed completely on doing the Wasp justice or, living up to her legacy in the Ant-Man movie.
Yeah. Well, Ant-Man still holds a top spot in the box office this weekend, passing even Pixels that launched this weekend.
Heard Pixels bombed pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think really anybody's surprised.
It cost like $89 million to make, and it only made like $20 million the first weekend.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. So Ant-Man's still going strong, huh? Was this, this is what, the second weekend it's been out?
Yeah, it came out last weekend.
Yeah. All right.
And Jurassic World 2 has been announced for the summer of 2018.
Again, no surprise there with how wildly successful Jurassic World 1 was.
Yeah, definitely not. And we there's one more piece of news that Marvel wants to cast Rachel McAdams for the female lead in Doctor Strange.
Any news on what character she's going to play?
No, not really. It just said the only thing that the article says is that it will be a female lead.
My guess would be Clea. For those of you not familiar, Doctor Strange met this woman in an alternate dimension called the Dark Dimension. Kind of rescued her from some captors and trained her. She's kind of like a sidekick, girlfriend, live-in lover kind of girl for a while. Her name was Clea. If you just like Google search Clea Marvel Comics, if you really want to know more about her, it would be my guess, but I don't really, you know for sure. So I like Rachel McAdams though. She's pretty hot.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
So I guess we'll see.
My name is Oliver Queen.
I'm going to train you. Use it.
There are other ways to see.
Kingston are left behind.
My name is Barry Allen, and I am the fastest man alive.
Malcolm Merlyn, you have failed this city.
TV news.
So, Jerry Ryan and J.R. Bourne are joining Arrow in this upcoming season. J.R. Bourne is apparently playing Jeremy Tell, aka Double Down, and looks like Jerry Ryan has not been announced what character she'll be playing.
Have you ever heard of Double Down before?
I have not. It says that he's a metahuman who can turn his playing card tattoos into deadly weapons, so.
All right, yeah. I wonder if it's a. I mean, it could be one of two things. It could be a character original to the series, or it could be some super obscure old, like, Batman villain or Green Arrow villain from, like, the Golden Age or something.
I mean, they're bringing a lot of Golden Age people into Flash, so it could be.
Yeah. Interesting. You're all caught up on Arrow, right?
Yeah.
Still pretty good. Didn't they talk about kind of a new direction this season?
Yeah, I think they're going to bring it more of a lighthearted direction because of how well Flash is doing. So yeah, it's been pretty good. I think it's gotten better as it's gone on. So.
No idea who Jerry Ryan could be playing at all. I wonder if this. I mean, so they're saying they're bringing him on. This J.R. Bourne guy. I'm not sure who that actor is. Don't know if I'm familiar with him, but I mean, obviously, he's not just going to be like a one and done villain. I wonder if he's going to be like the.
Most of their villains are come back every once in a while, at least, so they try to not get anybody who's, like, too... I mean, most of the villains, you've seen them somewhere or another.
Yeah, it's not like the old Smallville show where, like, Freak of the Week.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just wonder if, he's going to be, like, the end boss or whatever for the season.
So. Yeah, I don't know. Probably not. I feel like they're going to be focusing more on Damian Dark for that.
Yeah. Maybe he's like Damian Dark's like main enforcer or something.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyways, also in Daredevil news, Elektra is going to be in the next season of Daredevil, as everybody knows, but it sounds like she's going to be a person from his past, a crazy ex-girlfriend of sorts.
Well, that would fit right in with the comics.
Yeah.
In the comics, I had met in college. And I wouldn't say she was crazy. I mean, they were boyfriend and girlfriend in college, but she certainly had some emotional issues. I think they were dating in college, and then, like, her father got killed, and she, like, ran back to Europe or some such. And the next time Matt Murdock encounters her, he's Daredevil, she's Elektra, the assassin, and, you know, it's kind of like a shock reveal thing. Oh my god, there's my ex-girlfriend, and now she's an assassin, and blah, blah, blah. So, who's playing Elektra?
Well, they haven't announced, they haven't made a decision yet, but they want to get Elodie Young, who I've never heard of.
Yeah, I don't know. Jennifer Garner's not available or what?
I guess they don't want to bring back old memories.
Yeah. Plus, it's kind of old to play Elektra at this point, considering the guy that plays Matt Murdock looks fairly young, right?
Yeah, I don't think it would really fit in.
Yeah, so probably
need somebody. Plus, she'd be way taller than him, I think.
Yeah. Well, at least they're not getting Michelle Rodriguez. Can't stand her.
Yeah.
All right, what else you got?
Supergirl is actually going to compete with Gotham this fall for the Monday night slot. They're both at 8 o'clock.
Which
is definitely weird to me, considering they're both DC and they're going to be competing against each other, but I guess it's rival networks.
Yeah, but again, that seems like... I mean, Warner Brothers license, like, okay, Warner Brothers is CW, so, you know, obviously that's Arrow, that's Flash, they have more control over those shows.
Yeah.
But it seems like when they license these other properties out, they would put something in the licensing agreement that says, you know, they're not allowed to compete with their own stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, just about everybody nowadays has a DVR, they're watching stuff on Netflix later, or Amazon Prime or whatever, so... I don't know that it's as big of a deal as it would have been in the past, but I, much like you, I find it very strange. I mean, there's 7 nights in the week. You couldn't put it on a different night. And even if you do need to put it on the same night, you put it at a different time slot.
Yeah, I think they're going to be just taking away from each other's ratings instead of competing for them.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's some diehard DC fans out there that are going to want to watch both. And there's going to be some where, you know, the lightheartedness of Supergirl is just not the target audience, you know? I mean, to me, it seems like Gotham's more aimed at, I don't know, like the 25 to 40 male demographic. Whereas we know that, I mean, CBS has pretty much come right out and said that Supergirl's more of the, I don't know, 12 to 18 teenage girl range. Kind of thing. Yeah. So they are their primary audience, I would think, would kind of be completely different, but still, you know, like you said, they're both DC. Why not try to take advantage of more of the fan base and put them at different times?
Yeah, it's weird, especially since there's like no superhero TV shows at all on like Thursdays and Fridays.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see one of them get moved. Who knows?
Yeah,
I mean, have they announced? Has Fox come right out and announced that Gotham's going to stay on Monday?
They didn't announce that it was changing.
Yeah, but I'm saying if they haven't announced their fall lineup, they could still like.
Well, I think they have announced it so far. I mean, I don't think that they would just list it in there if it wasn't.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll see.
Yep. And Iron Fist. Still seems to have no news, and this might mean bad. It's bad for the series, considering the Jessica Jones is going to be releasing later this year. It's interesting. I mean, they just haven't really been making any moves on it. It's, either it's not coming out for a while, or they're not going to do it. I'm not sure.
But have they? I mean, have we heard anything about the Luke Cage series? We haven't heard any news on that either, right?
Well, Luke Cage is going to be in just the Jessica Jones series, so. We're going to get his character no matter what.
So there was 4 series originally announced, right? Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, and was Defenders the last one?
Yeah, I think so. But I think they said that they were going to make a Luke Cage solo, too. So.
Oh, so it's 5, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if they're having a hard time finding a showrunner, or if it's just one of those things with a lot of moving parts, and it's all going to, like, everything's going to, like, fall into place all at once, and then it'll just hit the ground running. If they're waiting for other actors or directors or creative people to finish current projects they're working on because they haven't lined up to do Iron Fist after, or if it really is in trouble because they don't know what direction they want to take.
I don't know. I really hope there's an Iron Fist series out at some point because it definitely interests me.
Yeah, it would be a shame to see it like lack in quality because everything, you know, they just didn't have enough focus or didn't give it, you know, enough attention, didn't give it its due, you know what I mean? because well, it definitely has the potential
part
to
of the
be.
Reason.
What's that?
I think that might be part of the reason because they want to make sure that it's only going to be good. They don't want to make something that's not good.
Yeah, just throw it together and throw it out there. I mean, it has so much potential, you know, martial arts and glowing fists and I don't know. I think more so than, I mean, because when you think about it, like you look at the old Daredevil comics that the series is kind of based on, that Frank Miller era, and Daredevil certainly the main character, but you also have the Kingpin as a very central and important character, and you also have the setting, you know, the city and Hell's Kitchen, whatever, as kind of a character in and of itself. And so it kind of, it lessens the pressure. The pressure wasn't like so great to like pick the exact perfect actor to be Daredevil to carry the series.
Yeah.
And like you said, with Jessica Jones, Luke Cage is there too. So again, it kind of splits, you know, all the pressure, all the expectations don't fall on the shoulders of just one actor. I feel like with Iron Fist, if they don't get that casting right for Iron Fist, if it's not believable, I think the whole series could really fail. Because when you look at the history of the character and, you know, the legacy of the character, he doesn't have like this huge supporting cast. I mean, it's him and Luke Cage. Power Man and Iron Fist was a series like for a long time, and then Heroes for Hire. So, but Luke Cage is going to be over in the Jessica Jones because they're married in the Marvel Universe, whatever. And so it's like really going to be incumbent upon whatever actor they pick to really like carry that series.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's a problem. Maybe they just haven't, you know, found the right person yet. Or like I said, maybe they're waiting for him to finish a current project or something.
And who knows?
So,
hopefully we'll get news soon. And last piece of TV news, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. casted Limitless actor Andrew Howard, who's also been in Taken 3, Bates Motel, and Banshee.
I've never seen that guy in anything but Limitless.
Yeah, I haven't really seen him in anything either.
What's he going to be playing in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Bad guy, good guy?
I can't imagine he's going to play a good guy. I mean, this guy is like straight a bad guy character. It doesn't say, but I mean, it says an authoritative and intimidating agent. So he's
agent. Well, agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. That would make him a good guy. I mean, yeah, I guess he could be like an agent of Hydra. Although I haven't seen a lot of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I know, like, what's his name? Bill Paxton was on there. He was, like, a supposed good guy, but then, like, ended up being bad or whatever, so I guess there's no guarantee just because he's an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. that he won't be necessarily bad. His name's Andrew Harris. Like, he did a really good job in Limitless, which I haven't watched that movie in a while. Maybe I'll watch it later today. Really like that movie. But yeah, he played a Russian, like, mobster bookie guy.
Yeah.
In that movie. And I thought he was Russian. His name's Andrew Howard. Not a very Russian name. So I'm thinking he must be an American dude. It'd be interesting to see if he has the accent or whatever. I haven't really watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Too much, so.
I'm not completely caught up on it.
Have you seen all the first season?
I've seen about through halfway through the second season.
Did it get? I heard it got substantially better the second season.
I think it really picked up the second half of the first season, and it's kind of stayed about there. Yeah. But it's never been a show that's really held me like I need to see the next episode.
Do you feel like when you watch it, it really ties into the movie part of things, the movie side?
I felt like it really tied into the Lost Captain America movie, but besides that, not really.
Hmm.
That's the rumor.
And now for a rumor I recently heard. Bleeding Cool was talking about Gail Simone returning to Birds of Prey, which, you know, probably the series she was most known for. So people were speculating maybe a Birds of Prey series return. We know Birds of Prey was part of the New 52 relaunch. Was not written by Gail. I think it was canceled, like, I don't know, around 2018 or 2024. Do you remember when it was canceled?
I'm not sure. It's definitely around 18 or 24, though.
Yeah, somewhere in there it was canceled. I think, in fact, the last issue may have been the crossover with the Night of the Owls.
Well, that's only like issue 8 or 9, then.
Oh, really? Yeah. It definitely lasted past then.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, maybe it didn't even make it to 18. Anyway, then Gail went on Twitter and said that she's not writing the Birds of Prey series, but she's getting to do something to do with Birds of Prey and one of the other series that she's working on or whatever. So I kind of take that to mean that Birds of Prey maybe are going to appear in her Secret Six book that she's doing right now with Dale Eaglesham. So I guess only time will tell.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Quiz. What do you got for me this week, Jaden?
Well, it's just kind of a generic, who can you name this hero or villain by their secret identity name?
Hero or villain, huh?
Yep.
All right. Let's see how I do. How many do you have?
I got 3.
All right. Let's see how I do.
All right.
Marvel, DC?
It's both.
Any no hint, no help, huh? All right.
All right. What is Kurt's character in comics?
Who?
Kurt Connor.
Kurt Connor. I thought you said current character. Kurt Connor is the Lizard.
Ding, 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 ding. Yep, got it.
That one was pretty easy. All right, now I'm feeling better about myself.
All right, the second one is, what is Johann Schmidt's character in comics?
Oh, that one's easy too. Red Skull.
Yeah. And the last one is, what is Michael John Carter's name in comics?
Oh, Michael John Carter. This actually could be considered a trick question. He originally was... Oh, I almost blew it. You know, I was thinking of John Walker, who was, who took the place of Steve Rogers as Captain America and then became the captain later on. Michael John Carter, though, is Booster Gold.
Yep, you got him, all three.
Man, I almost blew that last one, though. Yeah, that would have been bad. Booster Gold is one of my favorite characters. I would have blown that one. It felt dumb.
You'll be preserved in this Mylar pouch, forever remaining in near mint condition.
Top of the stack. The series I'm going to talk about is Suiciders from DC's Vertigo line. Art and writing duties handled by Lee Bermejo. I recently had a chance to sit down with Lee at San Diego Comic-Con, talk about Suiciders and his We Are Robin series from DC. He's a real pleasure to talk to, so if you have a chance, I definitely suggest listening to that episode. With some of the recent delays that were announced, like I said, mostly it was Marvel. But there were a few DC titles that snuck in there, and Suicider 6 was one of them. I was very disappointed to see. I'm sure Lee fell behind. He lives in Italy, and he was over here in the States for about 3 weeks, so I'm sure that put him behind. And if you pick up an issue of Suiciders and see the interiors are like fully painted, digitally painted, a lot of detail, you could really understand why if he lost some time over here doing conventions and such, how he could need a little more time. But it slipped like 3 weeks, so unfortunately we're going to have to wait a little longer to see the conclusion to the first story arc. So for those that aren't familiar, Suiciders is the story of New Angeles. Basically, when the story starts, it's been 30 years since the big one, quote-unquote, finally hit California. And lots of parts of Los Angeles were destroyed. The city ended up kind of separating itself, sealing itself off from the rest of the United States, built a big wall, and kind of pulled itself up by its bootstraps to the point where it's now a preferred place. Like, people actually are trying to break in to New Angeles because of the prosperity and the good times and the access to plastic surgery and just the easy life that people have there. So it definitely could have gone the other way, you know, with refugees trying to escape to the outside world and such. But and the name of the story comes from these gladiatorial-type games that are held a few times a week. And the contestants of these games, rather than being called gladiators, are called suiciders. So the story focuses on the saint, who's the most successful of these suicider contestants. And as the story goes on, we learn that he kind of immigrated in the early days of New Angeles separating itself from the rest of the world. And we certainly don't have all the answers yet. We're waiting for issue 6 to kind of figure out where it goes from here. But so there's somewhat of a mystery element. There's definitely some social commentary, much like I was talking about with Daredevil earlier, about how the city, Hell's Kitchen, or New York City, however you want to say it, is a character. Much like that, Los Angeles is certainly a character in the story. And in fact, when I spoke with Lee Bermejo, he mentioned how, for him, the Suiciders title is more the story of New Angeles. New Angeles is really the main character rather than the saint or any of the other characters that he's going to introduce going forward. He does have plans for more stories in this setting. So it's a really great story. It's certainly for mature readers. There's a lot of violence, a lot of blood and gore and such. So, you know, it is DC's Vertigo line. It is meant for mature readers, but it's definitely worth picking up. The art, for the art alone, I mean, the art is just absolutely gorgeous. So, really good story. Highly recommend it. Suiciders from Lee Bermejo and DC Comics.
And this week I read the Red Hood and Arsenal issue 1 with written by Scott Lobdell and the art by Dennis Medry. And I was a big fan of the Red Hood and the Outlaws series, so seeing this book coming up really got me excited. And this issue is actually a different take than I was used to. It's still like Red Hood and Arsenal, but it feels a lot more fun and lighthearted, even though it seems like they're still doing the same old, like, not quite vigilante, but they solve crime the way that they think is they should. And this new art with Medry seems to make it a lot more of a fun story than a serious story, but it definitely seems like it's going to be interesting, and definitely love Scott Lobdell's writing. It'll be something I'm going to be reading for a little while, I think.
Do you like it better than, I mean, I know Kenneth Rocafort was the artist on the, I mean, do you feel like that was a part of the reason that it had such a different feel?
Yeah, I think that the art is one of the main reasons. I mean, the art in this book is very cartoony, very stylized, whereas Rocafort has a very, I don't know, it's detailed and it's a lot of lines.
Realistic.
Yeah, it's more realistic. But I think this will be good. I mean, I really liked Red Hood and the Outlaws, and I doubt this will live up to it, but I can hope.
Did Red Hood and the Outlaws feel like a team book to you? I mean, there's only three of them.
It doesn't really feel like a team book to me. It just kind of feels like they're just partners. Kind of like Batman and Robin, how it kind of just feels like they're one character, kind of.
No, I'm saying Red Hood and the Outlaws, when there was three of them,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying too. I think it feels like a team book, or it felt like a team book a little bit.
Right, and now there's just two of them. But what I'm getting at is, you know, there's the whole buddy cop kind of dynamic, you know, like,
yeah,
Lethal Weapon kind of, you know,
yeah,
giving each other a hard time and, you know, cracking jokes and whatever. And so if you're saying this book's more lighthearted and fun, then maybe that's kind of
I could definitely, I could see that. But I do feel like they, it's, I mean, Starfire didn't really add very much, like, character to the Red Hood and the Outlaws, because they were, she was so different than them two, that they were really the only two that could, talk to each other with normal conversation. So it kind of was like that already, but, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting why they chose, I mean, there's all kinds of different books that came out when the New 52 started. They could have put Starfire in all, a lot of different places. Could have put her in the Teen Titans book. Could have put her in Justice League. Could have had her in the Green Lantern books even, you know, out there in the cosmos. Yeah. Any number of places. And they chose to put her with Red Hood and Arsenal. Although, you know, I guess when you think about it, Arsenal had some Teen Titans roots in the pre-New 52 also.
Yeah.
May have to ask Scott Lobdell about that sometime.
Mm-hmm. Maybe so, he's just a big fan of the character and he wanted to use her.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't read Red Hood and the Outlaws, so it's hard for me to really say. You know, I know that the dynamic between Arsenal and Red Hood, you know, they're similar backgrounds, you know, both started off as sidekicks for, you know, other heroes and such, and so you can kind of see them as, you know, relating to each other and being good friends and, you know, having common experiences and giving each other a bad time and such. So, yeah, strange fit for put Starfire in that dynamic. So, I don't know. I guess we'll see. Maybe I need to check it out. I did get a copy of the first issue. I just haven't had a chance to read it yet.
Yeah.
So, would you categorize it as a comedy book?
I think that there's some comedy in it, but I wouldn't categorize it as a comedy book now.
Would you categorize it as like a buddy cop kind of?
Yeah, I could definitely like
a buddy,
see that. Or
a buddy team?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that.
Let me ask you this. Would you prefer to have the artist on there that's on there to say Dennis Medry?
No, definitely not. I'd rather have Roquefort.
Do you think his style would suit the buddy team concept, though? Or you think it would be?
Yeah, I think so. I think it would still. I mean, it probably wouldn't be as fun because it probably wouldn't be written as fun because of the art, but I think it would still be. I think it would still work out.
Okay. If you had to read. If I held out New 52, Red Hood and the Outlaws, or number one, Red Hood and Arsenal, you have to read one. Which one did you pick?
I'm definitely picking out Red Hood and the Outlaws. I really like the idea of Starfire being with them.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll do a crossover with Jimmy and Amanda's Starfire book.
Hopefully.
All right. Well, I think we've used up enough of your time. I want to thank everybody for joining us once again on the Comic Source Podcast. Just a reminder, if you want to get in touch with us, you can go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com. You can contact us through the Contact Us link. You can comment on the episode threads directly. You can check out our sketch gallery, check out other episodes of our other podcasts. You can check out Manny's blog. You can also get a hold of us on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. Also, I'm pretty active on Twitter. Just do a search for The Comic Source, or you can type the comics. You can type twitter.com/thecomicsource and find us that way. If you'd like to email us directly, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. And I think that's pretty much it. I do have an Instagram for The Comic Source, but I rarely post on there. My intention is to post more on there next time I go to a convention. It's a lot easier to just take a picture on Instagram. It goes up instantly. I meant to do that in San Diego, but I had phone camera issues. So, once again, Jaden and I want to thank you for joining us.
Yep.
Don't hesitate to reach out with questions or suggestions, things you want us to review. If you want to send in a quiz, you could certainly do that. We love hearing from you listeners, so thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Later.